All right, BK, you've started 20 businesses in 10 years, right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, today you're going to tell me about every single one, and I want to know if you would do it again. All right, so start at the beginning. I mean, 20 businesses, that seems like a lot. Where did that start? How early did that start?
Look, I didn't think it was 20 either until I had to script this all out with Claude today. And it was like, holy shit, BK, 20 in 10 years is crazy. Actually, so this idea came from John Murphy. Shout out John Murphy. He's actually been on the show now. He said he heard the boys on My First Million podcast do this. And he was like, you guys should do this too. So thanks, John, for the idea. If you're listening to this and you got something you want to hear from us, tell us too. Come tell us in our community, lowbar.com, lowbarpod.com. But my first thing was, look, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so, at first, it was just me stealing little drummer boy quarters. It was like a special quarter that they made. My dad collected. I would just steal them out of the safe to go buy candy with because that's the only place I could get money. And then I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to make money. So I would say 10, 11. I'm definitely mowing lawns by 11. Every lawn that I can mow in the neighborhood, thanks, Dad, for the gas money back then, but I'm mowing every lawn I can. I have a paper route at 11 years old. I'm doing the Eau Claire Leader Telegram after school every day. So I had to deliver it at 6 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday, and then like 4 p.m. During the week. And so, I'm just riding my bike around and dropping those off. And tips were good back then too. I remember dropping off the Leader Telegram to all the old folks. They tipped well. Then I would say the first, I don't know if you want to call this the first real business, but I was selling weed in high school. It was the first time like actually thinking through, I don't want to call it a profit and loss statement, but you have to go buy the product and you have to resell it. And my goal wasn't to make extra money per se. It was like, how can I smoke for free by flipping some of this? But I would say that would, if you want to call that my first real business, I would say that's what it was for sure. After that was more like after high school stuff. Like, I remember like somewhere around the financial crisis, gold went on a huge run. I don't remember when it was, but I think it was pre-financial crisis, like when it started sniffing out something's wrong here. And I was like, I got some gold, right? I dig in one of my, do you have tubs? Do you have big boxes of stuff from when you were younger that just sit in your garage somewhere?
Probably at my mum's house, sure. I don't have any of it.
So my parents, I was the youngest kid. So at 18, they were like, see you later, brother, get the hell out of our house. And like, that's when I left with all my tubs. And in my tubs was a class ring. Everybody seemingly bought a class ring senior year. No one wears those things. Maybe old people like to wear those. They don't, around here at least, they don't get worn. So I'm digging in my tub, I find it, and I bring it to the local jewelry store, and it was a few hundred bucks. I can't remember how much it was, but it was significantly more than I paid for it. And I was like, holy crap. And it just ding, light bulb went off. And I'm like, everybody has one of these. Everybody does, right? And I'm thinking of all my drinking buddies, all my, my stoner friends and whatever else. And I'm like, I bet they could all use their $100 back that mom and dad paid for their ring. So I just went around and I started offering all my buddies $100 for their class rings. And then I would just go down to the jewelry store and sell it to them for the cost of gold, which I want to say was like $400 per ring. So I was doing pretty well on those class rings until, inevitably you start running out of class rings, I think.
Got no friends. Yeah.
If they're listening to this, this might be the first time they realize that I was, making money off of their dumb decisions.
Ripping them off. Well, yeah. I mean, that's like that kind of business thing. I mean, it still exists today. Like, I know you go down to like a local mall here and there's a dude sitting there behind a desk going, hey, you got any old gold you want to get rid of? And, he's give you some money for it on the spot, and he's getting more for that gold. I mean, obviously based on the gold price or wherever that's at some point. Maybe he just stores it until the price of gold moves and then sells it all to whoever he sells it to. So yeah, that's a good one.
But I'm buying it from John, so John can have $100 to buy beer. He's giving me, the jewelry store is giving me $400, so I can also buy some beer. And so, it was just we were supporting Anheuser-Busch is really what we were doing. After that, I had a guy at Walmart DC who was selling fake jerseys. Shout out to Rick. If you listen to this, Rick, I miss you, buddy. I don't know how he got the hookup long before. Nowadays, everybody can find this stuff on the internet, right? But back then, he had the hookup, and they looked really close to real. And so, I would buy some because I wanted them. I got like a Kirby Puckett light blue jersey. And then, I just went around to people I knew and was like, hey, I can get it for this price, right? Which was a little bit more than Rick could get it for. And, I would profit a little bit of margin there. And I didn't move many, but I don't know. It was a way to make money. I think I've always had that in me of just like, I knew I needed to make more, but I never really knew how, right? As you can tell, you know, selling weed, flipping glass rings, flipping counterfeit jerseys. I don't think I had any good ideas back then, but I knew I think the entrepreneurial spirit was in me, like, you know, from a very early age. I just didn't have a clue what to do because we grew up, you know, I didn't have any entrepreneur guidance at all. I didn't know any entrepreneurs. I wasn't around anybody. It wasn't in my family. And so I think I was just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it would stick.
So you're not doing counterfeit jerseys again in 2026, I take it?
No, I don't think so. No, and you certainly could. Like, they're out there for sure. DHgate, I think, has some pretty terrible looking fake jerseys. You could. I don't know. I think the first real one that I tried was, I want to say it was in 2009. I was big in the UFC early on. I don't know if you were as well. But Joe Rogan used to say, and he still said for a while, when someone got knocked out, he would go, "Oh, they got hit right on the button." And I was like, wait, well, Tap Out is huge. There were some other brands back then, but really it was just Tap Out. And I was like, why does no one have on the button fight gear? So I launched it. I bought onthebuttonfightgear.com. We started sponsoring local fighters. We went to the bar and we were like, would you buy a shirt? No, everyone. Hell yeah, dude. I'll support you. I'll buy a shirt, right? So we go buy hundreds of shirts thinking we have all hundreds sold. No one bought one. Everyone's like, oh, actually hit me up tomorrow. I don't know. And it was just like, dude, what a fucking shitty feeling to, you know, that's really how most business goes, if I'm honest with you, right? Like in Amazon, I've certainly reached out for tons of reviews and oh yeah, totally. I'll help you when you get your product. No one will buy your product. No one will test it. No one will help you out. Everyone is a big crab in the pot. They don't want to do any of this stuff. So you're sitting at a bar watching them buy, back then it was probably like $5 to $7 drinks over and over and over again. And you're like, dude, you can't buy a $15 t-shirt from me, a $20, you know what, I have the box right here. I'm standing in the corner of the bar. I don't know. That one didn't last long. I think we had a really cool logo. It was fun going to fights and watching some of these local fighters. One of them, I think, got on the Ultimate Fighter and got knocked out by the eventual champion with a liver shot, actually. But you know, it was fun. I don't know. I'd still rock those shirts today if I had one, I think.
Yeah. And that's obviously still also like back then you mentioned maybe it was 2009. You didn't know anything about the internet, I'm guessing, back then either. So like you're not trying to promote any of that stuff online either. It's all just local, right?
No, I'm sitting there on my, you know, those huge computers you used to have, right? And like I built it on a Wix site. Like that was when Wix early came out. And, you know, I'm grabbing pictures of fighters that they gave me, and I'm taking a picture with a digital camera and putting it on the computer and putting it on the site saying we sponsored this fighter. And just like, you know, it was terrible. Honestly, it was really terrible. And I had no idea how to market it other than go to the shows. They would wear the shirt walking into the cage, which, thank you, I didn't pay them anything. That was really nice of them. And then we'd sit in the back with a table and no one would buy them there either. It was just like, how do I sell these things? Tap Out made it look easy. They would just have it in the trunk of their car and people would buy them.
Yeah, nice. So that was a bit of a hard lesson for you then. It's a good lesson though. I mean, it's such a common lesson, right? Like you hear lots of people who have a version of that story. Oh, I had an idea and I talked to all my buddies and people I thought would like it. And they said, yeah, hell yeah, I'll buy one. And then they never did. And it's kind of like,
you can't count on anybody, dude. It's brutal. All of my entrepreneur friends I can count on. I think I could call every single one of them that I've ever met. I would call them all friends, but they're really, you know, they're acquaintances. We never talk, but when we do, we can talk for hours. They would all bend over backwards for me. And I've hung out with them a couple times at a mastermind or something like that. But if I went to old mate that, you know, I drank with for 20 years, right? And we went to high school together. No, I don't understand that, if I'm honest with you.
Well, I think it's because your business buddies, they at least get it, right? Like they know, they know that they've lived that experience of launching something new at some point, and the anxiety you have and the nervousness you have and, you know, the shitty feeling when nobody buys it, at least they can sympathize with you, I think. Even if they think your product might not be the best thing ever, they're still going to support you because, you know, that's kind of what we do, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you learned some hard lessons there. Like, where do you go from there? Did that like put you off business for a while? Did you have a bit of a pause there?
Yeah. Somewhere in the middle, you know, another guy in Texas launched the same thing, and he had, what was the guy's name? Camille Nanjiani or something. I can't remember what his first name was. Fighter in the UFC or WEC was wearing the pants. So like, had a, you know, a pseudo legal battle in the middle of that, and no one was buying the shit, and like that left a big fucking like stain for me of like, this is what business was. I suck at this. Maybe I shouldn't do this. And so, you know, I probably waited, you know, I think my next business I started in 2015. There were certainly ideas running around my head. I'd heard about high ticket dropshipping, which is where I started on podcasts. And I remember, you know, driving my they call it a PE. It's like a motorized forklift that you stand on while I'm, you know, packing dog food and other non-conveyable materials at a Walmart distribution center. I remember seeing the basketball hoops or the treadmill or the fitness equipment or stuff like that and going, oh, how much is this? Could I get that brand on board? And like, I remember thinking about this for a really long time, but you know, it was like I said, 6 years probably of me sulking before I actually did something in 2015, which was, you know, launch my own high-ticket dropshipping business.
Hey, John here. I just wanted to take a quick moment to let you know about the Low Bar Pod membership. If you've been loving the show and you'd like to come out with, hang out with myself, Ben, and a whole bunch of other like-minded individuals, then the Low Bar Pod membership is for you. It's just $9 a month or $7 a month if you take the annual option, and here's what you're going to get. One, you can join our private community platform where all of our members hang out, where myself and Ben hang out. We chat with each other. We share all sorts of stuff, ideas, ask questions, get feedback. So you get access to that community. You get access to one live Ask Me Anything session each month of the year with myself and Ben. So we get on a call. It's hosted video call. It's live. You can ask questions. You can pre-submit questions and have them answered by us. Anything to do with business. And you get access to the recording and the transcripts of every Ask Me Anything session. You get direct chat access to myself and Ben in the community. So anytime you want to run an idea past us, have us check something, have us look at your business, whatever it might be, you can chat with us in there. You get direct and exclusive access to all of the Low Bar Pod challenges that we're either running, we have run, or we're going to run in the future. So our membership platform has a space in there for all of our challenges. For example, a 75 hard business challenge that we've talked on the podcast recently, that happens inside our membership, not outside of our membership. You get access to all of the podcast and Ask Me Anything transcripts for every episode. We post those within our membership area. So if you're somebody that wants to read what we talk about rather than watch videos or listen in, you can do that. And then finally, every Monday, we send out our Three Moves Monday newsletter. We only send this to our members. And in that newsletter every week, you get three business ideas or strategies that you could implement into either starting a new business or growing an existing business. So it's just $9 a month. You can cancel at any time. And all you need to do to get in instantly is head to lowbarpod.com/join. And you'll find a link to that below.
So you launch your first high ticket dropshipping business, and where were you in life at that point? So like you're mentioning you're working at a Walmart distribution center. How much were you making there?
Yeah, when I started, I want to say I was making right around $20, which pre-COVID blue collar work in Wisconsin, pretty good money, all things considered, for, you know, having no schooling or whatever. But I had just made it to first shift, which was like the holy grail in that building. When you finally have enough tenure to get there, you've won. I had the worst job on first shift. I had to be there at 4 a.m. Everyone looked at inside. They only played fucking 80s music on Sirius XM all day, which 80s music, as much as you hate country, my friend, I can't stand 80s music. It's right there. And so it was brutal. And I have the worst job. I'm stacking dog food or non-conveyable items. And like it was not fun. I mean, that was really the impetus for me to, I had to get out of there, right? So I think late 2014, in the summer here, I was going to garage sales and like scanning items and throwing stuff up on eBay. And I was like, oh, this ain't going to work, right? And then I started researching high ticket dropshipping. I ended up buying a course in early 2015, finally pulling the trigger. And you know, I built and sold that first store while working at the Walmart distribution center. So I eventually went off first shift to second shift, which was like 3 p.m. to 1 a.m. 4 days a week. And so I'd wake up whenever I woke up, right? Maybe 10, 11 o'clock. And then I would work on my business for a couple hours. I'd go to work. I'd come home. I'd play Call of Duty for a couple hours because that was Modern Warfare 2 era, the greatest era ever to play video games. And then I would like go to bed and I'd wake up and I'd work on my business for a couple hours. And, you know, like I said, I built and sold that in 1 year. So I sold it for 1 year's pay, almost exactly 1 year after I took that course, which to me was an absolute fortune, right? I couldn't imagine that you could make that much money in one fell swoop.
Yep. And so I guess that kind of was that kind of like the spark for you then, that obviously I think you've been doing consistently since then. You know what I mean? You got that. And I think it's nice. Like you got like, I mean, in today's terms, you probably wouldn't think that was a huge win, right? Like from a monetary amount, but it's kind of like you need some wins. I think, in business. Like, it makes such a difference. Even not even big wins. Like, people often think about, like, when they think about business, they're like, oh, you know, I need to be like the Mark Zuckerberg or the Elon Musk or the, you know, like, business is about, like, making billions and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And it's the reality is, yeah, I mean, it could be that one day for sure in rare cases. But, like, I think what people lose sight of is, like, it's really important in the beginning just to make some wins. Like, get a win, because once you get a win, like, your brain changes, essentially, I think. Like, you start thinking, holy shit, this is actually possible. It's not a dream, right? And I'm guessing that's probably what it felt like for you at that point.
I felt like I could do anything, but I didn't really know what to do. And I would say in the moment throughout the next 10 years, it felt weird. Like, it felt like I was kind of being pulled in certain directions, but it felt very incongruent. And now when I look back and I try to put these in order, and some of these are out of order as we go here, but, like, it all felt almost serendipitous. I'll give you an example. So the first business course that I took held a business conference in Thailand, of all places. I wasn't really making sales. And I see a magazine that says, for when you take a trip to Thailand and go to that island and blah, 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 blah. It was literally what the whole thing was about, as the tickets were for sale. And I looked at my wife. I'm like, we can't afford this, but we should go. So we buy tickets to go. Magically, sales start coming in on that store. We end up going to Thailand for a conference, which I've never left this country before. That was a trip on its own. I freaking love Thailand, by the way. Awesome. We go to this conference. While we're at the conference, there's two guys pitching Amazon FBA who are there. They somehow overhear a brokerage talking to me about, hey, you can sell your own business here. Justin from Empire Flippers is like, you could sell that business that you have. So he convinces me to sell my first business. Those guys over here, they convince me to take some of the profit from that first business, invest in their idea, literally an idea. They haven't even started yet. I give them $8,000 of my sale for 10% of their idea. But that turned into the next thing, right? I didn't really have a next thing, but here we are launching adult coloring books called Creatively Calm Studios. That also led to me launching my own set of gel pens on Amazon FBA. It really led to, like, a whole new journey that in hindsight, it's like, yeah, that looks very linear, but that feels very weird in the moment, right? You don't know what you're doing. I'm just kind of, I feel like I was like riding on the wind, I guess. And that's the way the wind took me. In hindsight, you know, we ended up selling Creatively Calm Studios somewhere like $300,000-$500,000, somewhere in there, right? So a good win for 10%. But the partners were fucking terrible. Literally, fuck those guys. I've gone on a rant on our other podcast about them, but, like, you know, fuck them. But good outcome anyway, right? But, like, I would have never guessed it would have turned out that way or led to the things that it led. In the moment, there was an opportunity in front of me and the door was open and, you know, in hindsight, the pretty shitty idea to invest $8,000 into someone's idea for 10% of their idea. But, you know, it ended up working out well. And I feel like everything that we go on in the rest of the show is going to feel like that to you. You'll be like, wow, that's weird how that led to that and that led to that and that led to that.
It's interesting you say that, because I think, like, you obviously just went for that. And maybe you feel like in hindsight, obviously, you might say, I did that because I didn't fucking know anything at that point. Like, I was dumb. Essentially, like, I didn't know any better, but it sounded like a good idea, so I just did it, right? But at the same time, it turned into something good, and so that's like an example of saying yes to something without necessarily knowing how it's going to work can often be a good thing. And, like, most people at that point would just analyze it forever. Do you know what I mean? Like, they would second guess themselves, and most people probably wouldn't do that. And so I think that's interesting. I think certainly something I would notice from a lot of your stories is that and something that you can notice from other successful people as well is that they tend to be more comfortable with saying yes quicker. And that's not to suggest, like, doing it without any sort of analysis of things or anything, but, like, actually getting to the point where mentally you can say yes quickly to something is, like, that's a good thing.
I think there was still the little kid in me too, right? It was like, oh, these guys have made it and they're choosing me. Oh, I can't wait to be chosen by these people who have made it. And so I can picture it. I'm sitting in my Ford Edge in my driveway at 1:30 a.m. getting home from work while they're pitching me this idea. I can picture sitting there discussing it and going, I have to do this. One, I'm a little afraid I can't do what I just did. So I need somebody, and this will be a theme as we go along here. I need somebody next to me to do this with me. And these guys are geniuses. Certainly I need to partner with these geniuses, right? And so I think there was a little bit of, again, not out of, I should say yes because I'm a risk taker, I'm a badass or whatever. It was more like, oh, you know, someone please rescue me and save me. A little bit of victim mentality, I would say, back then, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like, when you're early on, it's easy to think people sound like geniuses. Like, I know the two guys you're talking about, of course, because I actually know them. Not through that example, but I met them after this. And those two guys are definitely not geniuses. And you know now also that they're definitely not geniuses.
Sure.
But it's funny, like when somebody's just got a little bit more experience than you and they've been doing something for a little bit longer, it's really easy to, I think, mistakenly put people up on a pedestal that they don't necessarily deserve to be on. And I think certainly I've had examples of doing that myself. So, but this was a story about FBA, this particular bit. So coming back to my question, 2026, like, what do you think of FBA now? Would you do it again? FBA funding somebody else's idea?
I don't think I would fund someone else's idea, although I'm welcome anyone to fund my ideas. But hell yes to Amazon FBA with one caveat. I think back in the day, it used to be $20 to $40 products. I think the real window, at least what I've seen, you know, I like to mess around while I'm watching baseball. There's products in the $150 to $300 range that I think fit the new mold that where you can be very successful here. It's going to cost you a little more to get started, of course, but I think there's real opportunity there because people just haven't, the market hasn't matured enough for to people to see that opportunity. They're still fighting over the scraps and everyone's paying Amazon a shit ton of ad money right now. I think there's an opportunity in the $150 to $300 range. Most nights, my brain won't shut off. I'm lying there chasing new ideas, diving down rabbit holes, thinking through business problems, all of it. I can't turn it off, and honestly, I don't even want to. I fucking love this stuff. But I do need solid sleep if I'm going to show up as the best version of myself for my wife, for my kids, for my business partners, and for me. So every night, I take Kill Switch from Switch Supplements. I've been taking it for years. I take a scoop, I watch a quick YouTube video, and within a half an hour, I'm out. It works every single time. My wife takes it. My employee takes it. We even gave it out at a couple of our live events and everyone loved it. If you're the same way, you can't turn it off, but you still want to win big the next day, go to switchsupplements.com/lowbar and use the code lowbar to get $10 off your first order. That's switchsupplements.com/lowbar and use the code lowbar. Sleep like you're dead.
All right. So kind of jumped through a couple of different business models there, really. So you had the high ticket drop shipping. Then we've got some FBA in there. Where did the high ticket dropshipping thread go from there?
Yeah, so it came back. I was, and I think we'll get to this later. I had some podcasts through that process. Someone reached out to me. It was supposed to be me and three other people on a call. I think you know all three people actually, and the two people who didn't show up, you would laugh when I said they didn't show up. And so it was just me and one guy. His name's Corey, and Corey was like, "Hey, what would you do with my business?" He was selling composting toilets, and I was like, "Hey, what? Who buys the composting toilets?" What I think was a real epiphany for us at Dropship Breakthrough too was the who. And he was like, "Oh, a lot of people are building a tiny home." And I was like, "Why don't you sell everything else to the tiny home owners?" And I kind of laid out my pitch for him. And before we're even off the call, Corey was like, "Cool, you want to do this with me?" And I was like, "What does that mean?" And he's like, "I'll give you 50% of my company right now. Let's just go do this together." And so he did. And we pivoted from composting toilets to shoptinyhouses.com. We built it together. I think we ran that, I don't know, for a year, something like that, before he reached out and he was like, "Hey, I want to do this on my own with my wife. I'm ready to buy you out." He told me the number, which was a little bit more than the debt my wife and I had. We were considerably in credit card debt and just like consumer debt. And I was like, "Fuck yeah, this will pay off all of our debt. I'm thrilled." I go home. I tell my then wife about it. And I don't know whether it was the same day. It feels like the same day in my head, but roughly within that same week, she says, "You know, that's great. I want a divorce." And so we got a divorce right after that. And so I did the honorable thing, or at least I like to think it was. I paid off all of our debts. I gave us a clean slate. You know, I was dabbling in some other businesses. She didn't fight for those businesses. It was just like, okay, let's just move on. So, you know, that a nice high came with a low, but again, if I'm in hindsight, man, something felt like that's exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right now. And so, you know, hopefully she's not listening to this. It doesn't sound like that, but you know, it was her idea. It wasn't my idea. But it also, like, I wasn't shocked. It was just like, okay, this is what we're doing. Again, everything in hindsight looks like that's exactly the way it was supposed to go.
Cool. That's nice. And you can still go to shoptinyhouses.com if anybody wants to go and check out look, it's a pretty dated looking example of a high ticket dropshipping business, but it's still running there.
I think he might have sold it, if I'm honest. I don't know that for certain, but I think he might have.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, look, it's not a bad example of sort of the concept, I suppose. If you wanted to check out what that looks like, would you do that again? 2026 version of Ben Shop Tiny Houses.
I think that maybe they're not as popular as they once were, but I think the mm-hmm. who still exists. The product still exists. Some of the brands have really risen to the top, which I think they have in some industries. And you know, there's one or two brands that make 70% of the sales in the industry. Maybe we'll say 60. Mm. And if you cannot build a relationship with those brands, then you're trying to swim upstream. So I think you would have to get those brands on board to be in that industry. But if this is you want to live in a tiny house, You want to live off grid. This is, yeah, why wouldn't you do this? You can make content all day long, which I think is kind of where we're moving to. You're going to have to create content in some sort of fashion, let alone, you know, again, somebody might just want to make an extra couple $1,000. And if you live in a tiny house, that might be all you need to make is a couple extra $1,000. And so this could be a dream job for somebody. I don't know if I want to go back in there. They weren't my favorite who to serve. They're a little, you know, they're a little frugal. I imagine they have an odor to them. I don't know. I'm just saying they didn't seem like they were my people, I guess.
Brutal. No, that's cool. But the thing I like about this, obviously, I think this is, you know, there was an epiphany in there for you around the serving a who. And I think I reached that kind of conclusion at some point as well in a, via a different pathway, but that's obviously something that's carried through to today. And you know, if at Dropship Breakthrough, where we help people start these businesses, you know, that's still the way we come at it, right? Find somebody that you can serve, that has a particular interest and or a passion or whatever you want to call it, and go and serve them there. So you mentioned content though, like when you were just wrapping that bit up there around, like, you know, if you were going to do this today, you should create content. And I know for you, content something you love and has been a kind of consistent thread through your journey as well. Where were you at with BK's content at this time? Because I know you're a podcast guy. You love your podcast shit.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't see this in the outline, and maybe Claude made an error here. But right around this time, I did that, right? So 2015, I just started documenting my journey on takeconsistentaction.com, which I still own the domain, you know, someday. BK loves his domain. Someday I'll get back there. So I probably did 10, 11 episodes on Take Consistent Action. At that first business conference is where I met a couple other gentlemen who, for some reason, I thought they had something I didn't have. So once again, I reached out and said, please partner with me. And we all partnered together, and we started Ecom Fire around that time. That's when I really started pumping out content. So, we would do 6 days a week. There was three of us. So, Monday would be me. Tuesday would be the, guy number two. Wednesday would be guy number three. Thursday would be me. And we would just do it that day. Here's a short. We just hold up our phone. This is back before shorts were even really cool. And we would just record a minute video, 2 minute video on a topic and put it out there. And it did really well, honestly. Like, I don't think there was a lot of people talking about this. This was pre AliExpress dropshipping becoming what it turned into. And so, I think we were the preeminent voices on the platform at that point. What's funny is, like, now that you mentioned that, it didn't even click for me that rolled into Easy Commerce Wins with Corey. So we went from 20 to 21 already, because I don't think that one's on this list as well. But you're right. Content kind of played a role throughout this. And I think it's going to play a role in e-commerce. I don't think it can't. There's no way it can't, right? I just think everything's going to get commoditized. And so I did a presentation about this in 2023 at one of our live events. I think there has to be some sort of content in your future. It really needs to be a little bit thought out. I think too many people want to jump in and do things that are shitty. Like there's a lot of videos online where it's like someone's using, the 19 product photos that you have and putting music behind it and shuffling between the 19 product photos and telling you this is a great video. That's not a great video. And it's not going to drive you any clicks off of YouTube, right? You need to actually create content people want to watch and helpful content. And if you can do that, is that going to help your brand in the future? I absolutely believe so.
Hey, John here for just a sec. You know how we're always breaking down these wild business ideas and road testing opportunities that other podcasts won't touch? Well, we're growing our own business here, this podcast, and we need your help. So here's the deal. If the Low Bar podcast has given you that holy shit, I can actually do this moment, or just made your commute less boring, help us out. If you're watching on YouTube, go and hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on Spotify, go to our profile page on Spotify and smash that 5-star button. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the review button and leave us a review. It takes you just 30 seconds, costs you nothing, but helps us reach more people who think starting a business is rocket science, which it's not. And it will also give us the momentum we need to do even more fun and crazy business stuff right here for your entertainment. We love to keep it real with you. Now keep it real with us. Let's grow this thing together. So you do shop tiny houses, and we're sort of 2015, 2016 kind of times here. Knowing you, you weren't just doing that by itself though.
Is that a thread we're going to pull here too?
Like, come on. I mean, let's be real. I haven't known a particular time where BK wasn't trying to stick his fingers into multiple things at once.
Even pre-business.
In business I'm talking about here. Like, what else have you got going on at this time?
So as most of my ideas come from, it came from a podcast, right? So I'm listening to a podcast. I can picture myself in a room listening to it. And the podcast said, you can't do the Amazon challenge anymore. And so the Amazon challenge was that you could start a business on Amazon FBA for less than $500. Don't know why that day I was like, I'm going to ignore everything I should be doing. And I'm going to go research this and say, I can do that. Right. I was like, fuck that. I can find this. I end up finding glucosamine for dogs in a big giant liquid bottle, had a bunch of reviews. Honestly, that brand has shut down now. They had a ton of sales and they shut down for some reason, Terra something or another. And I was like, well, let's see if I can find the manufacturer. And so I just started Googling. I found what looked like the exact same bottle, same ingredient panel. And I was like, this must be the manufacturer. They had a, sell our stuff button on their website already. I clicked it, downloaded the PDF, and I could start with a minimum order quantity of 12 bottles. And I was like, 12? That's insane. 12 bottles. So then I went to Upwork and I said, guy, can you make me this label? And he made me a label. I ordered 24 bottles. I signed up for Amazon FBA and I sent them in. So for about $300, I had started Paramount Pet Health, which ended up being a really big brand for me. I ran it for a long, long time. Back to the partner angle, somewhere in 2020 or 2019 or somewhere around there, I wanted to bring on some partners. I think I had a plan for what the partners could be. It didn't quite work out to that plan, but in the end, we sold in 2023 for close to $1 million. And so very, very good day for all of us. We sold for more than we thought we did. Shout out Chuck at Quiet Light Brokerage. Chuck's the man. If you want to sell anything, call Chuck at Quiet Light Brokerage. He really helped us out here, did a really great job for us. But it all started from a podcast, just on a whim. And so, I know you like to give me shit because I have too much stuff going on. But this one started because I said, fuck it, and just did something one day. And can someone start a brand for $300 nowadays? I don't know. But I did. I did in 2016 and I sold in 2023 for a lot of money. And so, I think we were talking on a different episode. Maybe it wasn't this one, John. You were talking about missing cash flow. Talk about missing cash flow. I love that I sold that business, but that business just, if you help someone's dog stop limping, they're going to buy your product forever, literally forever. And so like that business just continued to make sales month after month and just continued to like grow slowly, but it grew and just, it just was like, here's your paycheck every month. Just here's a nice chunk of change. Here's a nice chunk of change. And I'll be honest, man, that gets addicting. And when it's gone, it feels like mommy took your baba away or your nook away or something. You know what I mean? It feels, I miss that. I really, really miss that.
Yeah. And I think that's, just thinking about it from the outside as well. I mean, that was never your full-time thing either, right? That business. No. Like, and so, you sold it for, like you said, close to $1 million. And obviously you split some of that with the partners, other partners, of course. And although you were, I would assume, the majority owner of that. And so like that's a pretty good outcome for a business that was kind of like just part of what you were doing at any one point in time as well. You know what I mean? Like it didn't demand all of your time to grow it or make it run or get to that point where it was just producing cash as well, month to month, aside from what you sold it for. I think that's a pretty cool story. That one. I like that one.
Yeah. I'm curious where it would be now had I just let it run. Right. But I think during that time, you and I were exploding on Dropship Breakthrough. And it was just like, okay, I need to focus a little bit here. I need to do something else. And I spoke to Chuck, and Chuck came back with a number that was nearly twice what I thought the number actually was. And I was like, Chuck, if you can sell it at that, let's sell this thing. And I think I listed it. I think I did the seller interview while I was in Australia at one of our events. And it was just like, we were taking off. And it was like, okay, I'm going to go this direction now. And yeah, not that I feel bad. Certainly, I'm not annoyed at the process or how it went down. But yeah, cash flow is king. Cash flow, I think I needed to learn that lesson that, once you have the goose that laid the golden egg, you should just let it keep laying eggs instead of selling the goose.
Yeah, sure, sure. All right. So that's like 2016 to ish to 2023 or something like that. Of course, I keep giving you shit about, you're probably doing too many things. So you're still drop shipping at this time. And I know in that time period as well, it's probably the story that a lot of people know about you. Or at least a lot of people who have probably listened to us elsewhere before who might also listen to this. You had a big dropship win, drop shipping win in that time period as well.
Yeah, I had a few I wouldn't call wins either, just to throw them in there, make sure they get included. I bought, one of my coaching clients owned washandflush.com, a bidet site, and I was like, this is a good idea. No, bought it from him on Flippa, never did anything with it, which is hilarious because you and I are part of a bidet store now that does very, very well. So I had my foot in the door way back when. And then I built pellegrillpros.com, which I eventually sold for a very small amount, whatever, $20,000, $30,000, something like that. Sold it to a guy. Bought it back. He sold it to another guy, and then we bought it back. So you and I own that now as like a demo store for our business. Before launching into this good one, I had a couple that were not so good, but the process was the same. So Wash and Flush came from me coaching somebody, right? And that was from me putting out content. And so I'm putting out more content. My wife had just, she was disgruntled at this point. Apparently I didn't know that, but through that content, somebody reached out, bought coaching from me. They were the first person to buy 10 hours of coaching from me at $1,000, which at the time I was like, holy shit, someone's going to pay me $100 an hour to coach them. I could not fucking believe it. And so I gave them my all, and they were American. And so I was with an Aussie at the time, not you. And the Aussie was like, you do all this coaching because you're American. I was fine with it. These guys were also from Wisconsin. And so I was thrilled, right? And they were doing golf simulators. And I was like, man, I love golf. I love Wisconsin. These guys are great. They ended up hitting $250,000 in sales in their first 3 months while I'm coaching them. And then we just kind of became, acquaintances through that process, right? They were in Wisconsin. They would shoot me a message and just be like, hey, what would you do here? What would you do here? I'd reply back and be like, here's what I do. Just, you know, pro bono, whatever. Just answering their question for them after our 3 months ended. And for the next 9 months, they're sending those questions. I would answer them and I would leave a little quip at the end of like, you know, you could have me in the business. I was not shy about the fact that I wanted to be in this business. It was probably 2 weeks after my wife asked for a divorce, maybe even a week, like literally it was like right after that. They were like, hey, how would you like to come on this business? And so they offered me what I think was a sweetheart deal at the time. It was 20% for 20K or on an earned in basis. We were just going into Q4 when we got the paperwork signed. And so for me, it was like, hop in there, pull a couple levers, and we exploded into Q4, and I was earned in within 6 weeks. And so like life was really, really good from the start. They hit $1 million in their first year. 2 years later, we did $11 million. They approached me at our like company meeting in February pre-COVID, and they were like, hey, I think we're ready to go back on our own again. How do you feel about a buyout? We negotiated a buyout, and then literally like a day, maybe 2 days before the world shut down, we signed the paperwork, right when indoor golf became the only fucking sport you could play during COVID, which I would assume did quite well. So, again, big, big exit for me. I was very happy with this high six-figure exit, very similar to the Paramount exit. I was very happy with it. I'm still happy with it in hindsight, but who knows what it could have been if I just, stayed there for another year. But again, these two boys started the business. They brought me in. I had a great exit. They grew the company. I think everyone was happy in the end. They wanted to, they wanted to continue growing their business. And so I could not have been more thrilled. I'm happy for them. I think there's only one of the two left now. I think one of them bought the other one out. And I'm happy for Sean, honestly. I'm thrilled. But fuck me, man. Fuck the time. God damn it. That stings a little bit.
Yeah, I love how there's a theme of timing through some of these stories, and it's gone been both good and bad for you.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. But those are big numbers. That's great. Would you do it again? Either the question of buy. I kind of know the answer because we've done it again since. But like, you know what I mean? Like joining somebody else's business as a minority kind of person who's there to help, provide advice, all of that sort of thing. And obviously, once again, this was a high ticket dropshipping business, which once again, we just did an episode on is dropshipping dead. Here's another great example of like a business that probably went, I would assume during COVID, past 20 million in sales a year, like clearly not dead.
Yeah. Look, I would do it. Obviously I would do high ticket dropshipping again. I think we'll get more into that, but I would do that company again because it was like something I was really passionate about. It was fun.
Sure.
The partners were awesome. Easily in my, they're up on the podium of partners I've had for sure. Also, it was the framework for how we thought about partners, right? So, it wasn't a novel idea when I came to you and was like, hey, we should consider partnering with some of our students. The framework was already built. This is exactly what I've done in the past. And we kind of used the same framework. I think we used literally kind of similar paperwork. And it was just like, okay, let's do this. And here's what I like. Here's what I didn't like about it. And we've made adjustments in our current partnerships.
Okay. Okay. I remember some other ones that come to mind, and maybe you can run me through these. There's obviously, we're kind of moving into some of your story where I'm a lot more familiar with it just because we're kind of a time period that you and I have, we obviously met in 2016, we've been friends since on and off more so in some of those early years before we were business partners. But like, I remember a couple of names that kind of feel similar. So you had Standing Destination and also like Any Season Sports. I remember that as well. I remember that name from your story as well, from you telling me about it in the past. Where did those fit in here?
So we're selling a lot of golf products, and I was like, why don't I do this for baseball? It's kind of where it started because I love baseball.
Right.
And then it was like, well, why don't I do this for every sport? And so I built anyseasonsports.com, which yeah, maybe you can find on Wayback Machine. You probably can. And I just started building it out, right? Pitching machines, L screens, mostly a lot of baseball stuff, and then volleyball serving machines.
Yep.
Before I could get into too many sports, the golf guys approached me and they were like, hey, you're not going to sell golf stuff, are you? And I was like, why would I compete against myself? That sounds really terrible. And I don't know if they believed me. And I was like, look, I'll sign something that says I'm not going to compete with myself, I guess. You have nothing to worry about here. I just want to build this business. And they kind of let it go. And then they came back a few months later and they were like, hey, look, this is going to be a problem here if you're going to go into golf. And I'm like, again, I'm not going into golf. And they were like, well, how about we just buy it from you right now? And they offered me a number that was fine. You know, it wasn't a lot, but it was fine. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can buy it. And then they bought it and they shut it down. And I think some Chinese company owns it now. I don't know why, but that was it, man. And so, yeah, I think I've, even today, you know, 10 years later, I could give you 10 other high ticket dropshipping business ideas that will definitely work. I wish I had more time because I think they would all work. There's no shortage of ideas of products to sell and people to serve. And so this was just another one of them. I would do this one again in a heartbeat. I love sports, mostly baseball.
I'd say it's still an opportunity for the right person. I mean, I haven't seen anybody killing that one. So
I've seen a few in the baseball, but I remember the margins were not pretty on some of those products, but I haven't seen anyone like, you know, branch out really to other sports.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, the other one you mentioned in there was another partnership. So I met Brian Angel. I think we were in a similar course, and then we ran into each other at Traffic and Conversion Summit in San Diego, and we just kind of hung out. Turns out he loves baseball. I love baseball. We have similar views on the world. And so we spent a whole lot less time in the conference, and we spent a lot of time eating tacos and just shooting the shit, which is, San Diego's awesome for that. And so he saw what I was doing, with the golf company, and he said, can you come do that for me in Standing Destination? We worked out a deal. I bought 10% of that company quite quickly. I think this is shortly before COVID. COVID killed all of our big sales, which was where all the profit was. When we would sell 100 to a company, that was profitable. When we would start selling the onesie twosies during COVID to people who work at home, not so much, right? Like this is the no man's land trap. All of these things were in the $2,000 to $1,000 range where you can sell a lot of them. And we did, and you make no money. So we did $1 million in sales and made $0 on it, which is brutal. And then Brian decided to make the pivot. So he went and acquired a standing desk treadmill company, Unfit, I believe it was called. He went and acquired that business again for no money down. He's told that story on our other podcast.
Yeah,
cool story.
Yeah.
Bought that for no money down. And then a big brand name, InMovement, which was owned by a $1 billion brand. They only did $5 million in sales, and that was not a win for a $1 billion brand. So they were just going to shut it down. And we were like, we'll take that. So we hopped in, made a licensing deal with them, and ended up acquiring that brand as well and all of the product that they had left over, kind of bundled that all together, which seemed like a great move. I like the idea. And somewhere in there in the middle of COVID, Brian was just like, I don't want to do this COVID shit anymore. I want to travel the country in an RV. I don't think that's fair to you. And so I'm willing to buy that chunk back off of you, and I'm just going to own these businesses. So it's not unfair to you. We're still great friends today. We thought it was a good idea. You know, back to your timing piece, I'm pretty sure I know what Brian did with that business. He recently sold it all, and I think he did quite well. And so, you know, maybe I left a little bit early for the upside in that business, but you know, Brian's a great guy. I would do anything with Brian. Again, literally anything. Brian's one of my best friends.
Yeah, awesome. Shout out to Brian. Hope you're well, buddy, if you listen in.
Well, speaking of Brian, I think he spent all of his money into like short-term rentals. Like he'd be an awesome guy to come on here and talk about his journey of like how he's spotting good ones and bad ones. And you know, some people, I think a lot of people have lost a lot of money on short-term rentals, and I think he's done quite well.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we should get him on for sure. From here, I know this is around the time sort of where you and I are starting to work together. So clearly I know some of the story around dropship breakthrough and that sort of things, but you're still dropshipping at this time as well. You can't get your little pause out of it.
Yeah, I think there was a little pause in there, right? So like I exited and I kind of was like, what do I do? Honestly, what do I do? And you know, we're stuck at home. My wife had two family members die like really early in COVID. Like, and I mean really early. They both died, and it was like, so we probably went overly aggressive on, you know, I can picture us wiping down groceries. I can picture us doing all sorts of crazy stuff that I'm sure other people listening probably did too. But we went overboard because she had two family members die like right away. It was wild. And so I'm at home. I have nowhere to go, and I'm really bored. And so I start up the BK Show, which is still live. You want to go listen at thebkshow.com. It's on every podcast player. I think I did 30, 40 episodes. You were on there. It's fun. It was something to do during COVID, and I did it until my son was born, and I said I was going to take a month break, and I've never gone back and produced another podcast again for that show. But it was fun. So that was like my little bit of a break. And then you and I came together, and we built Dropship Breakthrough in that same period. You came on that show, we talked about it, and I was like, holy shit, John, that was really fun. How about we go, and I think I bought dropshippodcast.com right on the spot. And we started a Patreon podcast, you and I did, just talking shit. Honestly, it was like you and I arguing, like some of the most fun podcasts I think I've ever done, because it was just you and I. We didn't care, you know, if you want to pay us $5 to come listen to us, great. But it was just me and you kind of talking through the business model and like what we would do differently. And it was fun. And of course, that led to, you know, teaching people to high ticket dropshipping and also starting some more high ticket dropshipping businesses, because I can't help myself.
Yeah, that was fun. I agree. Like that was back when that... It's just audio only podcast too, right? Like you weren't doing video and stuff. And I think it was like, I do think to a certain extent, podcasting was a bit more fun back then, right? Cause you were just like, I just have to worry about the audio. I'm just going to punch it out on, you know, Apple Podcasts or, you know, whatever. I don't even think there was Spotify wasn't really a thing for podcasts back then either, really.
No, we were just on Patreon, right?
Yeah. And now, you know, I mean, now it's still fun, but you've got to like think about, oh, like how's it going to go off on YouTube and how's it going to go off over here and over here? And there's a lot more that kind of has to go into it to stand out, I think, now. I mean, you still have to have that core like sense of enjoyment and be passionate about the thing you're talking about, right? You know what I mean? I think you still have to have that, but it's kind of like you've got to have a bit more than that at the moment.
It's a grind. Like everything's a grind, right? But it did feel like less of a grind back then, I would say, than it does now, where you're, what's the thumb going to look like? Did you confirm the thumb with the title? Is the opener confirming the, you know, the title? And just like, you know, it's really YouTube focused now, really. Back then it was Apple. You know, how could you rank on Apple and Spotify?
Yeah. Awesome. So we're getting pretty close to now. Like what were the other dropshipping businesses that, like you mentioned, you started other dropshipping businesses in there. What were some of those?
Yeah, I got a few here. So one is, my friend Ben, most people would know him as Fry. He's in our communities. He's like my best friend. He came to me in the middle of COVID. He was like, I cannot do my job anymore. He was closing title sales. Like you would buy a house and you'd have to go sit in a little room. And so he'd sit in a little room wearing a mask, close all the sales, you know, sign 40 pieces of paper, and then they'd leave. He'd have to wipe the entire room down, open all the doors, air it back out, bring in the next crowd, do the same thing. And he was just like, dude, I cannot do this anymore. I'll come to work for you for pennies. Just give me something to do. And he was for real. I paid him $12 an hour and he built wellnessjunction.com for me. We were selling, you know, red light therapy, saunas. Honestly, we were a little early, if I'm honest with you, to that trend. But we were selling it. We did okay. We sold mostly air purifiers. So we kind of pivoted just to that, mostly because I needed him at Paramount Pet Health. I was like, dude, will you come work for me? Like this, there's too much to do over here. And so he shifted to Paramount Pet Health. He started running that day to day. Currently he works for Dropship Breakthrough. He helps out Low Bar Podcast. He's the one that makes sure all of this stuff gets, you know, put together and out on YouTube. He does a lot of little stuff for us that neither you or I want to do anymore. But back then he built that business. And so, you know, it was just me teaching him from scratch, really. It was a lot of async because I wasn't quite in this office yet. And so, you know, he'd build one thing. I'd send him a video reply on how he could do it better. He would build it again. And you know, I want to say he was probably taking whatever we had for a course back then. I don't think Dropship Breakthrough was around yet. And so I ran that for a while. That's the one. I think I mentioned it briefly on a previous podcast. At one point, we had 5 products, and it made $1,500, $2,000 a month. We really didn't do anything. And I had one of our students reach out to me, and he said, hey, are you doing anything with that? And I said, no. And he made me an offer that we really couldn't refuse. And so I said, here, you can have it. And so one of our students took that over. Similar story to had one of our students reach out and say he wanted to sell his business. He wanted $2,000 for it. This is podiumstage.com. So I bought that in late 2024. I sold it to a different student in late 2025, you know, just fixed a couple of things that need to be, I could see he was growing. I could see the trajectory. Apparently they didn't want to continue. And so I fixed it and flipped it. And, I think that's it for catching us up to the current era, I think.
Yeah. There's a lot in there. So where are we at currently? What's the current picture for BK? So let me guess, there's more than one business.
There's a few. All right, so we got Dropship Breakthrough. That's where you and I teach students to start an e-commerce business. We have Dropship Podcast, which you and I do together. Honestly, more recently, it's more separate stuff. It's more, you know, YouTube first, and it goes out on a podcast feed. We do this podcast together, Low Bar Podcast. We run a community over there, lowbarpod.com. Come join us. We have four partner businesses. At one point, we had a few more, and we kind of brought it down to four. Currently, all high-ticket dropshipping businesses, all students that came through our course. Very excited about all of those. They're all at varying different stages. You know, one of them nearly hit eight figures, and we're launching our own product. One of them is low to mid seven figures. One of them is probably going to hit seven figures this year if it hasn't already in the last 12 months. One of them's earlier on, but I think has probably the most upside if we can get that ball rolling. So yeah, we have four partner businesses. I have a new store I just launched that is really focused on my son, Carson. It's the products he's seeing at occupational therapy, speech therapy, the YMCA, his school. I mean, everyone has these products, has a room. Target Field has a sensory room nowadays. And so it's just a lot of the products that I've seen him light up. Like, you know, for a long time, he couldn't talk. And so to see him light up using some of these products, he's turned into a little genius. You know, I can't say it's thanks to these products, but it's not thanks to these products either. So that launched that. And then another one, we'll just call it the secret project. I'm not going to tell. So that's everything I got going right now.
So there's obviously a bit of a pattern here that I noticed throughout all of all of these stories. One, you've been doing high ticket dropshipping for quite a while and you can't seem to walk away from that one. Once again, dropshipping clearly is not dead.
Yeah, I still love it.
As many people love to put out there online. I think you've done a lot of content, and that's certainly a recurring theme for you, is I think that belief in content, or at least your enjoyment of various forms of content. And you don't really do anything by yourself. Like, even from early on, you've done things with other people, like partners or, you know, whatever you want to call them. Is that the way to do it? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think?
I don't know if it's like mental BS or not. I've thought a lot about this. So I've worked with Elliot Rowe, who I think is one of the best mindset coaches in the world. And he's got the credentials to back it up. Go look at his like About Us page or his reviews page. Yeah. It's like Olympic gold medalist, poker champion, Olympic gold medalist, BK, Olympic gold medalist. And it's, you know, thank you for putting me on there. And I've worked through a lot of stuff, but I genuinely think this is a little mental BS. I don't know why that is, right? Like, and I put it in here, like 10% of Creative Column, 20% of Rain or Shine, 10% of Standing Desk. I brought on partners on Paramount. I have four partner businesses. I have three things with you right now. I don't know if it's mental BS or if it's like the actual playbook. It's funny because I hear this from my brother too. My brother, you know, our best listener, shout out Josh. He'll say, yeah, it's cool. You know, I'm really proud of all the stuff that you've done, but you've never really done it yourself. You've always had help. And I don't know if he's just like, you know, trying to rib me because he's my brother, or if he means that, right? Like, I enjoy building with someone else, but I genuinely think there's probably some in there of like me, like a fear of failure. You know, if I bring someone else along, they might shore up whatever weakness I feel like I have. I mean, the data backs it up. It's been successful, but would it have also, if it was just the BK show, for lack of better words, would it have been something more? Like if I was truly in charge of everything, could it be something great? I don't know. I asked the same question about whether I should only do one thing. If I was only doing one thing, how great could it be? I don't know. I wonder if I'll go to my deathbed wondering both of those questions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, I think the answer is different for different people, firstly, but I don't think thinking you have weaknesses is like mental BS. Everybody has weaknesses, right? Like, everybody's bad at some element of their business, and either you bring on partners to cover that or you hire somebody. So like there's no business owner that actually their business is built off themselves. Like I saw a post, you know, the posts that were coming out about businesses started with AI, and you know, there was, I can't remember whether it was Sam Altman or Amadei at Claude or whoever it was, but they said, oh, this year the first $1 billion single person business is going to be built. And so there was this post this week I saw somewhere. It's like, oh, it's come true. There's this guy, he's built this one business, he's built it by himself using AI, and it's on track to do $1 billion, or it's doing $1 billion, or like revenue or whatever, or it's worth $1 billion. I don't know which way they were cutting that up. And then it's like, okay, so what's the business? All right, it's this guy who's built a platform with AI, and he relies on a bunch of partner businesses to fulfill all the things that his business doesn't actually do because it's just him. And it's like, okay, well, that's fucking bullshit, right? That's not a single person business, right? None of that happens without other people. Like, if you take those partner businesses out of it, his whole business collapses overnight and it's not worth anything. And it's kind of like, that's the case. Like, even for founders who are like, well, yeah, I built this on myself, you know, there's like people who without whom that person would not be successful. They might not be at the headline of the business, but they're there and they're getting paid. And like they own part of the company often as well. Like if you talk about the biggest startups that you know, their employees own part of the company as well in a lot of cases. Do you know what I mean? It's not just the Zuckerberg or the blah, 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 or the someone else that owns it all. So yeah, I think it probably for you, it is the playbook. I mean, if that's where you go. I think the other good thing about it as well is if you were doing it all just yourself, you probably are out of that list, you would have done one or two of those things.
Yeah, I'm definitely not at 20-something for sure.
And so you wouldn't have been able to take advantage of the opportunities you had. You would have maybe had one thing and maybe it would have totaled up in terms of what you've actually put in the bank account over time or, you know, whatever. It probably might have been exactly the same. Like you might have built one bigger thing that would have been the combination of all of the other things you've done, but you wouldn't have as much experience either. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I think there's swings and roundabouts to how you cut that up. I think you could argue it both ways convincingly, right? I just think you've just gone in one direction on balance, and I don't think that's any better or worse than like going this completely solo, or nobody's completely solo, like I said, but like the solo ownership thing. Do you know what I mean?
I think I'm going to have to know at some point, like I'm going to have to know what the other side looks like. This is all I've done, right? And so to your point, right, I wouldn't have 20 plus businesses that have been around if I hadn't partnered. And that whole, you know, 90% of businesses fail. I think I must be the exception here because there's only a few of that we talked about that didn't actually make money. But man, partnerships aren't all great either, right? Like I've been in some really shitty ones. I've been in some good ones that are also shitty in some ways. And so I do have that what if in my ear of like, what if you only did one thing? That's always been there. And then the, what if you just did your thing where you're in charge? And of course, you're going to have employees. You're going to have probably other people on your cap table, but you're in charge. You're solely in charge. And I don't know if I've ever been solely in charge of anything through this whole process. Maybe you could say Paramount Pet Health. Mm. But even then I reached out and was like, somebody come in and operate this. Someone, you know, come in and save me. And Leanna came in because she's the crazy cat lady. She fit perfectly into this business as a copywriter. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how to feel about this one.
Yeah. Look, I mean, honestly, practically to the outcome, I don't think it makes a difference. Like, because like I say, like somebody who is like solo, like they're the leader, they make the decisions. Like people, I think, overemphasize the fact that they are actually making those decisions, right? Like, so to your point, Paramount Pet Health, if you didn't bring those partners on, you would have had to hire them. And they would have told you what to do. And you would have gone, oh, I've had this great idea, blah, 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 let's do this. When it was really just one of them telling you to do it. Because you didn't know fuck all about whatever their space was, right? True. And like you'd convince yourself, like single person founders convince themselves that they're amazing. When really, yeah, they might be great, but they're also working with a bunch of amazing people who are really the ones coming up with the ideas and all of that sort of. And that's why you're paying them, right? And you're probably paying them good money as well. But like saying like, oh, if it wasn't me here, this wouldn't happen. Let's be real.
So you think it's my ego whispering in my ear?
Well, I mean, everybody's influenced by their ego whispering sure. in their ear, right? I mean, sure. Everybody wants to believe they're the greatest thing on the planet. But like, you know, at the same time, like I say, I don't think it makes a massive difference. But look, another pattern I've picked up there is that a lot of those meaningful businesses, and I mean, there's a bunch of businesses that went to different levels and there's a bunch of relationships and maybe some of those were good and some were bad. But they all kind of came to you through having an audience of some at some level, and once again, your audience at different times has been larger and smaller as well. Probably you can even argue, even with a small audience, some good things happen there as well, sure. For sure. But that's you know, like certainly all of our businesses that you and I are partners on today, and whatever they do, it's down to the fact that we started a podcast, we talked about something. All of our current business partners heard us talking on a podcast at some point, right? And that's how we got introduced to them. Like we wouldn't know them otherwise if we hadn't have made the decision to make that content and put that out there. And so I think that's an important thing as well to note from this story.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an audience that I would put on a pedestal by itself. I would probably put network relationships right next to it as well. Just like if you can go to events and meet people,
sure.
I think both of those things are they can kind of make you unstoppable. Because as my friend George would say, relationships beat algorithms. I fully believe that. But you're right. The audience, like, you know, I had 5 podcasts at this point, I think, right? That brought in some of my biggest exits, brought us together and built what we built in Dropship Breakthrough, a dropship podcast. We're doing literally doing it again here, hoping that we can build an audience that wants to come hang out with us on Low Bar Pod and potentially brings in deal flow over here as well. And so I think it's going to be the only thing that sets you apart in the future, if I'm honest with you. You're going to have an audience, right? When anyone can make their own personalized music, their own personalized movies, their own personalized whatever the hell they want, you're going to have to be the person they want to go see directly. Like, you're going to need an audience. And maybe that's just you reacting to all that nonsense. I'm not sure, but audience is key for sure.
Awesome. And there's a lot of small percentages in there as well. I think that's something else that people, what's the right word? I guess it goes back to that being the single thing. Like, a lot of people think if you don't own a big percentage of something, it's not worth anything. Do you know what I mean? But you've got a bunch of examples there where you were maybe owning like 20% or something like that, and it still turned out to be a really good outcome for you.
Look, I think it started with one of the guys from Traffic and Conversion Summit. I honestly can't remember what his name is off the top of my head, but I remember hearing him say he had like 30 businesses that he was partner in, right? He had like 10% of them. And that made me feel inside like loved, I guess. Again, this might be some BKBS coming out here. And I was like, I want that. I want to be part of all these businesses and feel valued. And so, look, I think that's where it started. But yeah, man, you can't be Elon. How Elon like steers the ship on multi different billion-dollar companies, I have no idea how he does that, right? And so there's no way I could steer the ship on all of these businesses, and nor do I want to, right? Like, we partner with some amazing people on these partner businesses who love what they do, and they, you know, they want to be the leader, and we're here to support them being the leader. And so I've never had an issue with that. Sometimes it can be challenging having a lot of stuff going on where you have a small piece of it, because some days you're really needed and some days you're really not needed, and so it can be challenging for sure. But I don't have an issue letting other people drive for sure.
Yeah, I think it goes back to like, I don't mind it either. I think it goes back to that thing like a lot of us have like a particular part of a business that we like to play in. Or that we're best suited to play in, or that we have the most skill, the most knowledge, we can pull the most actual levers and things like that. And I like kind of in some businesses being able to just come in and do that thing or do those things and, you know, stay out of the things, which once again, by yourself in an early stage business, you have to do all the things, including the things that you're really shit at, right? You still got to do them because there's nobody else there to do it for you. And once again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's where most people are going to start for sure. But I do think it's nice sometimes to just say, hey, I can come in and do these great things for you. But I'm not going to do all the things for you. And so like equally, I'm not going to have all of the company either. I think that's not a bad thing personally.
It's hard to say even 10 years in that we're the experts, John. We literally are like the experts in high ticket dropshipping at this point. And if we're, you know, we might not be number one, but we're up there on the pedestal for sure, right on the podium. And that's hard to say, but that allows you to hop into businesses like this and bring that expertise and really help a business move along quickly. Knowledge is power. I don't remember what that's from, but it's true. Like, I'm very, very well versed in quite a few pieces of high ticket dropshipping, and that has allowed me to jump into a few of those businesses and move the needle quickly or help a business go in the right trajectory. And you know, 10 years is a long time to see patterns. And so I'm able to pattern match things that earlier founders might not see. And so, as much as I've been all over the place, I've been pretty focused. I've been pretty focused on a very specific business model for most of it, I would say. And that's afforded me the opportunity for people to be interested in offering me a smaller percentage of their company.
Cool, man. Well, I'm going to close by saying, BK, that's a fucking lot of shit in, I guess, 11 years, 12 years.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your show, buddy.
Hey, real quick, while I have you here at the very end of the show, John and I are trying to grow our social media channels. We're also sharing what we're doing from some of these podcasts on the social media. So we'd love to have you follow us. You can find us at Low Bar Podcast on TikTok and on X, and you can find us at Low Bar Pod on Instagram and on Facebook. Of course, all of these will be in the show notes of every episode. So if you could give us a follow, maybe like a few posts. Obviously, we're trying to grow our business too. Thank you so much for listening and following along and helping us grow what John and I are trying to build here.